All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Sonny Banks Show here on WWDB Talk 860. We're sponsored by Weinemann Pain and Wellness. We've got really a fantastic show, but one Sonny and I have been looking forward to for a long time. First of all, let me bring in Sonny to the broadcast. Sonny, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Joe.
It's great to be back at the home front here.
Right.
We're back. We're on location at Banks Law. Lots of great things. One of the things, we got a big announcement coming up. Our guest, a very special guest, we're going to announce the Legends of Justice Hall of Fame induction of Bernie Smalley.
Absolutely.
And
so excited for him.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to talk about the process and all those things because, man, I was there. Okay, just to watch it happen was, I was kind of a spectator, if you will.
Yeah, and I wasn't there at the beginning, so I'm interested in hearing the history from you.
Oh, absolutely. Without further ado, let me bring in Bernie Smalley, who is with Rains and Lawn. Bernie, how are you, sir?
I am doing well, Joe.
It's great to have you here. It's been a while since we had you on the broadcast. The last broadcast we had you on, you were being honored. And by the way, I was doing some research. This isn't your first rodeo. You've been honored a decent amount of times. So we're glad you acknowledge us.
Yes. So, Joe, does that speak to my age?
We don't talk about age around here,
no,
Bernie.
Please.
There's nobody in this
Thank
room.
Thank you.
Oh, it's our pleasure. I'll give a little bit of a background with the Legends of Justice initiative.
Please.
It was initiated by Philly Labor, our injured workers program, our Legends of Labor Hall of Fame initiative, and the Lawyer to Lawyer Network, which is our radio network. And so with our labor community, and we've been doing this, we launched the Legends of Labor initiative several years ago, and it's been nothing less than groundbreaking. We've had in the labor community, we've had the ability to take to showcase spotlight and to introduce the public and reintroduce to the public and a lot of our young labor union members, those individuals who really are massive in regards to the movement as it is. Like, there was a saying with young labor union members that, from journeyman, that they think they were born on third base, right? All these benefits and all these things. And so we started the Legends of Labor Hall of Fame a couple years back. And Sam Staten, as a senior, was our first honoree. And just an incredibly groundbreaking. And when you look at the resume, legendsoflabor.com, of Sam Staten, senior, a lot of the politics in the city of Philadelphia, when it comes to our elections and supporting candidates and educating young people on, what impacts their paycheck, okay?
Sure. Yep.
But also the principles of labor, negotiating. And there's a saying in labor that if you're not at the table, you're usually on the menu, right? Well, we started with Sam Staten, senior, then Wendell Young, the third. And this is they're posthumous, and Wendell worked with several presidents, okay, and so and then Pat Gillespie, who was the president of the Philadelphia Building Trades, or business manager of Philadelphia Building Trades for decades, and so we at one point in there made a decision that we were going to do a Friends of Labor initiative, okay, and we decided, okay, I mean, you know, we have a big board of directors and everybody's passionate about it. When we launched the Friends of Labor initiative, we had an injury attorney, Sam Pine, your former partner, Sonny, who is does a pretty amazing job in labor over and above good representation for injured workers, committed to the movement and all those things. And so Sam got inducted, and then Saltz Mongoluzzi and Bendesky, and they're going in this year with Jerry Lee Hockey, they were also voted in. And so, but we noticed at that point we were getting a lot of people from different unions, different areas, submitting that, you know, that they wanted their union, their union's injury attorney. And we were like, listen, we appreciate it, but that's not what it's about. Right. We made a decision at that point. And by the way, it's an advocacy initiative. So what we don't do a banquet. We utilize the platform of talk radio so we can educate the public, okay, and union members on you know the principles of labor and the benefits of and the careers of us, our legendary leaders, because leadership is a huge part of it. We made a decision not long after, I guess about a year and a half ago, that we were going to do a Legends of Justice initiative. First of all, obviously we've been doing talk radio in the legal space for a long time. I am extremely passionate. It started with our injured workers program, and of course, well, you know, with third-party cases and with our workers' compensation and our injured workers is almost that. So you have your retirees, you have your injured workers, and you have your working, your rank and file union members who are still in the workforce. So we decided to take our legal initiative, aside from, you know, labor attorneys who will still stay in the labor space, and started a labor of justice initiative. We put together a board of directors that was second to none. Okay. And, you know, just, and I've been very fortunate. We talk about it, Sonny Banks, Bob Zimmerman, JB Dilsheimer, Jennifer Gomez Hardy, Frank Soprero, and myself as the executive director. And we started off, I mean, and this is what was so beautiful, Bernie. There was nobody that led anybody in this initiative. So when I asked, we went through the whole thing, took a long time to kind of, you know, we have our mission and we'll get into that. But when we sat down and we said, listen, please nominate 10 individuals across the board. And then we got to the 10, and then we broke it down and all those things. And at the end, there were six, and everybody nominated their own people. And there, what was amazing about it is, you have competitors on the board, all those things. By the way, Sonny Banks is somebody who would be on it right now. Mm-hmm. And that is going to come as sooner than later, obviously.
And it was done by secret ballot. Nobody knew.
Nobody knew.
Who was nominating who.
But Sonny, okay, he forewent, you know, being able to be voted in himself.
To be a part of the
committee. And right. So, which is amazing, because as you look at the blocks of granite in workers' compensation, and Sonny's at that table. And so it was in secret ballot, and I'm looking at it, and of course, then we whittled them down. And on an individual basis, everybody submitted their own people, you know, their own nominees. And it was such an honor and a pleasure at Bernie, because, you were at the top of the list, and wow. It was a beautiful thing. And so, but still, this is an initiative that is a new initiative, especially in justice. So I wanted one of the most important things was that we had a credible board.
Right.
Okay, and so that we went through a painstaking process. It was, painstaking, and so we're honored to have Bernie Small here as one of our inaugural inductees.
Absolutely,
there's only six.
Congratulations!
Thank you.
It's an absolute pleasure and an honor, and I've had the opportunity to do the broadcast and the interview from a couple years ago. So I was particularly excited about it. Because I'm like, wow, they got that guy right, but there was no politics in it. It was individuals that were nominating, who they simply thought was the best and worthy, because we're setting standards here.
Right.
They can't look at that list and go, Joe, that's your cousin talking about me.
Right.
Like, I'm being, the standards of the initiative have to be looking right back at you, and I think they did. So, couldn't be happier to have you here to announce this to the Delaware Valley.
It is such a privilege. It really is.
And the privilege is ours.
Sonny and I go back many years. Joe, you and I go back many years.
Absolutely.
A number of broadcasts previously.
Yes.
But when I looked at, when you and I had the first conversation, you always want to, who nominated?
Research it.
How did I get in?
Right.
Or how did I get nominated in the first place? And when I looked at the list,
yeah.
I looked at the individuals, and these are folks of long standing, respectability, at least as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah.
People who I've known for decades and respected for decades. But I do want to take a step back.
Please.
Because you mentioned one of the absolute legends in labor, and that's Sam Staton Sr.
Oh, yeah.
Who I had the privilege of working with on a project. He and I were working on it together. And there's just, you know, obviously he's no longer with us, but it was a privilege to know him and to work with him. I'm also proud to say that my oldest son, my namesake, is a member of IBEW and has been for 20 years.
Awesome.
He's labor through and through.
Well, so. I'll tell you, and in a sense, so Sam Staton Sr. was our first honoree.
Yeah.
And these initiatives, you know, one of the things that, you know, we want to do is to educate the public on justice and labor, okay? And it had to start at the absolute top. And so when you – and that Sam's Jr. is a great friend.
Oh, absolutely. And a friend of mine as well.
Right. I mean, him and my father. I used to get calls from Sam Jr. because my dad – was the head of the ironworkers for 40 years. And he would call me whenever my dad was hot under the collar. I'd be driving down to my nightclub because that's what when I was in the nightlife. And I get a call from Sam, you know, on the phone. I remember driving down East River Drive. Goes, hey, daddy, tell your dad to relax. Everything's going to be fine. He gets to sit, you know. And my dad respected him so much. And I'm like, can you call him? Because he's probably not going to take my call. He's probably be yelling at me. But it was such an honor. One of the things about all these years, and by the way, all this that we're doing right now was inspired by our injured workers program. Mm. The station gave me a production deal. I didn't know what to do with it, but I did. Was passionate about educating injured workers because we had that, you know, initiative in labor. And then one thing led to another. We were bringing attorneys on, and you know, I was educating. And so here I am. We talk about the ball games and all those things, and now I watch the commercials, and I'm looking at the Rogers rate and all those things, and I'm getting ticked off. I like Tyrese Maxey. But damn. So when I joke around all the time, Tyrese will come on, and so will what's his name, Kyle Schwarber now, right?
Right.
And they're all after the game, and they're going, hey, so and so, what's better than hitting a home run in the World Series? You know, the name of the, you know, he'll talk about forget the name of the insurance
company. Insurance company.
Oh yeah, right. But I'm like, oh okay, that's better than hitting a home run, and the Rogers rate and all those things, and But I it just annoys me to no end that we don't really educate the public about the importance of insurance and why you have it and all them. And it's not just about what you can afford. It's about protecting yourself. They don't educate.
So what annoys you even more is that the insurance companies aren't obligated to educate the public.
I mean, they
can sell the insurance.
I'll tell you one thing. I got to give them a hand.
Not educate them.
But the commercials are amazing. You know, you got the guy whose statue is melting, and, you know, you might not be able to put a statue, but when you need insurance, like, there's no connection to it.
Right.
But the point is, I have become a major advocate for education and all those things, and I think limited tort, full tort, uninsured, underinsured, motorist, all those things. My point is, and then the contingency fee agreement.
Yep.
Okay, so and educating the general public on that and the need for quality, representation, when you get injured either on the job, or as a result of somebody else's negligence, or at the same time you may be driving for a living, or you may be walking down the street. But the point is, I become incredibly passionate. So when I sit there and educate, I'm passionate about educating the labor public and the union members and all those things. I'm equally as impassioned about educating the public on these issues. Okay, because probably if I asked both of yous, to count how many times either you've represented somebody or you've heard somebody represented somebody who wasn't educated in the area of insurance and did not know what they had. How many of us all know?
Or what they thought they had was not true.
Full coverage. Right.
I'm sure I could ask Sonny the number of times that someone has said to him, well, wait a minute. My agent told me I had full tort. Well, what the hell is full tort? Well, you know.
That's the point.
Right.
Well, not even full tort.
Full coverage. Right.
Because you don't have full tort.
Right.
They sold you unlimited tort.
So the and if I ask both of you, how many times you've heard a story or dealt with a situation where somebody was catastrophically injured due to the negligence of somebody else and didn't have the insurance, and therefore the rest of their life was, you know, very difficult compared to somebody who did know. So I am passionate about educating people and utilizing this platform to do it, and the great leaders that provide that, because a lot of people think they could never afford attorneys like yourselves. And, you know, we make sure that that message is out there, amongst other things, but also the fact that needing good representation, and we educate the public on good representation. And we're going to get into that, you know, in just a minute. I mean, because there are so many questions that need to be answered when somebody gets injured, either on a job or as a result of the negligence of somebody else. Here's a couple good answers. Is that person dabbling in workers' compensation? You know, you and I have talked to attorneys on our jobs, that on our shows, that have said, you know, I dabbled in work comp and I got right the hell out of that because, you know, the stat, everything, you know, it's constantly renewing. You got to understand the whole thing.
It's its own animal. It's got its own statutes and regulations.
You need to be certified, you know, literally to be a specialist. And then in your world, Bernie, something like this would be a great example of something somebody may. And do you have the resources to be
absolutely
able to? Okay, I just got injured on, you know, I slipped on or I tripped over something on a, as I'm walking up in front of one of these high rise buildings. I am going to call my cousin Bob's friend Bill's sister Tina. She, you know, she does landlord tenant. She may be a great landlord tenant. Okay, but I had somebody on a show recently who had a client for the second time. This person had already gone, and the first thing that client said was, they were the day that they met, am I going to have to pay for the expert this time? So the point
this time.
So the point is, we do everything we can to educate people and also celebrate the best of the best in the industry, and that's what it's all about. So
one of the things that, and I've been in this business for more than a minute, it's north of 40 years. You stay in your lane. You do. If there's a workers' comp issue, if there's a Social Security disability issue, that's not my lane. I've got this guy, and I'm pointing directly at Sonny Banks on speed dial. That's why I call, or that's why I tell the client, if I can't help the client, to call. And Joe, you mentioned contingent fee agreements. If it weren't for contingent fee agreements, who could afford, if you're going to get quality representation, who is prepared to take the entire trip, not to just get you to second base? And if you're catastrophically injured, what you want is someone who's able to go the entire distance. And that requires that we outlay money, we not ask you to pay for an expert, or to ask you to pay for, I got to show up in an independent defense exam, but you got to pay for my travel expenses if it's some distance. We only get paid, we only get a fee if there's a recovery. And that's fair to you, it's fair to us. But more importantly, it's fair to the client.
Well, it's interesting, because it's almost mind-boggling. I mean, you know, just to think about it gives me chills. And the same in your world, right, Sonny? There's no out-of-pocket cost?
No, no out-of-pocket cost at all. I mean, we don't get paid unless the client gets paid. And, you know, I did what Bernie says about staying in your lane. I mean, it's analogous to having a serious heart problem and you need heart surgery.
Right.
You're not going to go to your family doctor to have that done.
Right.
You're going to go to a cardiologist, somebody who actually, you know, has been there and knows what they're doing.
Of course, and that's a great example. Hold on for one second. Analogous. Can you give me this? I just got to get on Google for sure. So let me just read a little bit about Bernie. Okay, so a fellow of both the prestigious International Academy of Trial Lawyers and the American College of Trial Lawyers. Been selected Philadelphia Super Lawyers every year since 2004, when he was only 18 years old, right?
Yeah, right.
And has frequently been selected by his peers to be named as one of the top 100 lawyers in Philadelphia as well as Pennsylvania. Former president of the Philadelphia Trial Lawyers Association, received its Justice Michael Musumano Award, received the President's Award from the Barristers Association, the Soaring Eagle Award from the Minority Caucus of the American Association of Justice, the Pursuit of Justice Award from the American Bar Association, the Justice Thurgood Marshall Award of Excellence, and as a member of the Bar Association and the Barristers Association, has been consistently named the most influential by the Philadelphia Tribune newspaper. And so, you know, these are just... I mean, a few with it. I could go on, but it's only an hour show.
There's not many awards left.
Right, exactly. So when I think about this, Sonny.
I'm humbled.
So are we, because one of the things that we talked about when we were picking this award and this honor was that we needed, obviously, the inaugural class had to be the best of the best.
To hit that particular benchmark.
So we're as equally humbled because you bring such credibility to what we're doing, yep. And what we're trying to do that, it's going to impact, the future of the actual initiative. And so we appreciate it. Let's talk about that. I thought about, this is a question I'm going to start asking. The client attorney relationship, okay? Talk about that. Talk about the importance of it, what it should be. What does it mean to you, and what should clients expect?
Great question. And in answering the question, Joe, I got to start at the beginning.
Sure.
We're called counselors at law. That's who we are, which means your responsibility is to counsel. The first counselor that I ever met was my dad. My dad owned a barbershop in West Philly. I grew up in the barbershop, so did my youngest brother. And I watched him counsel men, especially on a Friday night. And it was equal opportunity. If you came in that door first, you got serviced first. If you were third, and we had some interesting people come through that door. Pat Schweikert, who later went on to become the president of Howard University. Ronald Davenport, who later went on to become the first African-American dean of Duquesne Law School. Chief Judge Hasty, who was one step away from the U.S. Supreme Court. They all sat in that barbershop, whether it was eating peanuts or just waiting their turn. But they're sitting next to a stevedore. They're sitting next to a worker for the city who just got off. Everybody's equal. I watched him interact. I watched him counsel individuals on a daily basis. So that's my first responsibility and my first knowledge of what a counselor truly does. And holds confidences. That's what we do. During the course of handling a major, whether it's a Med-Mal case, a products case, an aviation case, you're living with that family, not for a month, not for a year, usually for 3 years. And if that case resolves, and it is our responsibility to make it resolve to the satisfaction as best we can of the client, if you lost the little girl, if you lost the breadwinner, whether it's the man or the woman, you don't get that back. But there's some responsibility that we have to bring solace, to bring some level of peace to the extent that we can, and a resolution that allows this family to heal and go on as best they can.
With dignity.
Oh, absolutely, mm-hmm. With dignity.
You know, it's amazing when you say that, because one of the questions... I've asked certain times about, clients, but never, as I was preparing for this today, sometimes was writing it down. I'm like, okay, this will answer a lot of what Bernie's all about. And that just did. But you're looking at when you're becoming a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And there are so many different areas. I admire so much the answer you talked about your father. And because when you talk about what those conversations, there's a lot of networking going on in there. Oh, like absolutely. You're learning, and business is that's a huge part of it. Or interviewing or doing these things and being influenced to those. My dad was not a networker. He wasn't, right? Well, I guess I had to talk my way out of, punishment or whatever if I came in late. But that education, one of the things that about being a lawyer, you talk about the contingent fee agreement, okay? That, I'm wondering if you were, when you were 18, 19 years old, if somebody would have brought that to you and said, listen, you never really get paid for 2 to 3 years. And by the way, you got to win to get, to get paid. You might have been like, yeah, I'm going to go into sports management or something like that. But that is the great equalizer. And there's so many reasons. To me, it's what makes you guys heroes.
Bernie also learned a valuable lesson about how to treat clients, because yes. It sounds like there are a lot of dignitaries at his father's barbershop.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I'm sure he didn't give anyone preferential treatment.
Nope.
They were all the same.
They were all the same.
Well, that wisdom, all the same. That must have been, I mean, if we could, I'll tell you what, if there were podcasts back then and in a real barbershop.
That would have been a place to do it.
Because, yeah. Right, who was it that, was it, it's, the LeBron James, he does a podcast and he in a barbershop. But what's amazing about that is this: they're emulating what your father did every day.
Absolutely.
Imitation is the greatest form of flattery and flattery. And you have you're describing a situation that is just amazing and priceless. And so you also learned that everybody's equal.
Everybody's equal. And when you see a disparity, part of your obligation, if it's part of the situation that you're dealing with, is to even out the playing field. And it is a level of respect that you get that stays with you, stays with the client, stays with the client's family, long after the case has been resolved.
Yeah, absolutely.
How many high school graduations have you gone to? Unfortunately, how many funerals have you gone to?
Right.
They get to be your family, and you get to be theirs.
Well, it's so interesting when I'm going to ask you a question in the minute that I've been meaning to ask, but we do the charity, okay, Sonny and I, and Sparking the Dream, and we bring in young public school kids who have no relationships with professionals like yourself, and so they always talk about. The young and underprivileged, the one thing they don't have are those relationships, those connections, right? So we decided to put something together, and it's just an awesome thing. By the way, I'm going to be sending you, we're going to be going to Temple University to do a big event on January 9th. But, it's amazing. I have the opportunities of doing these shows, meeting individuals like yourself. And it's a fleeting thing, though. Like, in other words, we do our show, we get to air it, and it's awesome. And we'll talk about it from time to time. And one of the things Sonny and I said is, we want to do something that's going to impact lives. The other night on the labor show, and this is the third year in a row, I did we did the broadcast at something called McClef. And there's a Medal of Honor winner there every year. I get the opportunity to meet them and talk to them. They gave me a book all signed, right? And it's just such an amazing thing, and a great honor. But you do it once a year, and so I'm incredibly grateful for these opportunities. But one of the things amongst all these things was I read that Medal of Honor recipient's story, okay, and I was, like, blown away because I read it when I was leaving the house. I was at River Casino. And, it was just, you get the hopper. We're sitting here with you now, and you've met what you meant. But what about, Bernie, when that client comes in, and it is a catastrophic situation, okay? And, you've been honored so many times, but not just because you're the smartest guy in the room, because being an attorney is way more than than being first in your law class. It's about being able to bring comfort to a family that maybe just lost somebody. What prepared you for that? Where they come in, you know, either an individual who will never be the same or a family, because people don't see that. I didn't see what was on the battlefield back in Vietnam when that individual was there, and saving lives. And we don't see when that person comes into your office when the glory's not there, when the rubber meets the road. Talk about that.
It takes time. When you look a person in the eye, and I learned it early on from my dad, when you meet a person, you shake their hand, but you look them in the eye. You don't, it's not about looking at the paper, what is this case potentially worth. It's looking them in the eye, spending time with them, talking about them, not you. Presumably, they know a little bit about you before they came in the door. What is it? And it takes a while before you get to that point where you have an understanding of what is important to them. Because, and realizing expectations, they will get from other people, well, I think your case is worth this, I think your case is worth that. They want honesty from you. And it's your responsibility to be honest with them, to let them know that, you know, this is not going to take a week. You've lost something. You've lost an arm. You've lost a leg. Your ability to earn money has been significantly diminished. Do you want me to do that and resolve it for you in a couple of weeks or a month? Or do you want me to take the time that it takes to listen to you, to know what your family is like, to know what your life was like, and to approximate where we can go and what is the best that we can do for you?
Time. No question. And you're fighting, and you're fighting often a David Goliath situation where you're just a number to an insurance company, and the sooner you try to rush that, you don't think that they're thinking. I mean, obviously, having a conversation when you take it to that time, don't you think they want to get you in and out as fast as possible?
Of course they do. Sure. Of course.
Let's talk about your daily motivation. Okay, you mentioned you've been doing this 40 years. Okay. What drives you every day to be as passionate as you still are? Okay, because you could retire anytime you want. Yeah. What still brings it every day for you?
I guess the way to put it, you know, there are certain racehorses who like to race. There are certain dogs who are at the firehouse who, when the bell rings, they get excited. I understand what my job is. I understand where my passion is. So when I get a call, whether it's from a referring attorney or it's a direct, because I'm a native Philadelphian, born and raised at 56 in Girard, I want to hear, and what motivates me is to spend time listening to, can I help? Because there are times when you can't. And your obligation is to be honest with your potential client and let them know that up front. Get them in the hands of somebody who can help. But if you can, the motivation is the conversation. And for me, it's always the initial conversation.
Let's talk about your career highlights. What when you look back on your career, okay, and, you know, you're still in the middle of it, so we'll have to catch you again in 20 years of me and Sonny.
hopefully not 20 years, that's for sure.
Remind me a lot of Bruce Springsteen. Bruce ain't going anywhere anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
They asked him that question. He's like, well, it's not going to happen. And I get it. Believe me, I just turned the big 6-0, and I'm like, man.
I love this question, because I was always – curious what Bernie feels is the highlight of his career.
I've been blessed. Plain and simple, I've been blessed. And there are situations that come to mind. One of the first cases I ever tried representing a widow who was a Holocaust survivor and was able to get out of Germany, later meets her husband-to-be, just happened to be a Dutch underground fighter they fall in love, and because of the injuries he sustained as part of what he did as a member of the Dutch Underground, had some significant problems in terms of his ability to not only clot, but his ability to move his blood throughout his body.
Sure.
Brought a claim on their behalf. He passed on. She was absolutely adamant that something happened. And the case came to us very late, but I dove in. And literally, there was a two-week trial, start to finish. And one of the closing arguments of defense counsel, who's somebody I not only respected but revered, was that one of the experts had an 85-page resume. So, you know, he had to be as close to God as anybody could be. Sometimes, growing up, you think about things, they come to you.
Sure.
And what came to me was, Richard Nixon must have an 85-page resume. I don't think he made it to the end of his presidency. That was my response. We got a verdict. The verdict was paid immediately. There was no appeal.
Wow.
She lived for another 20 years.
Wow.
What she did was to, wherever she traveled throughout the world, on my birthday, I would get a gift from her, wherever she was.
Wow.
The first gift she ever gave me is sitting in my living room right now. And for as long as I'm breathing, that gift, which is a beautiful bowl from somewhere in India, is going to be a part of my family and a part of my life.
That's incredible.
Fast forward, I had the privilege of representing three police captains, two African-American, one Hispanic. They took the test to become inspectors. And there was some shenanigans going on with the test, but they studied, and they studied as hard as they could. They ended up 1, 2, and 3 in terms of the results of the test. There was an article, it was published, Daily News, branded them cheaters because they couldn't believe that these two African-Americans and this one Hispanic captain, the three of them, could end up 1, 2, 3. I sued the paper for defamation, and we got the case. The case was resolved. But what I remember, and I will always remember, these guys had worked so hard. And one thing you get by having a reputation, once it's gone,
oh my God,
you don't get it back.
No.
So even though the case was resolved, here we are, 2 years later, I get a bottle of really nice wine. And the one now inspector, who later became a chief inspector, asked to see me. And he's got tears in his eyes. Number one, he appreciated the job that we had done for him. But he still did not have what I could not give.
Right.
And that was his reputation. Because whenever somebody looked at him, even though he was now chief inspector,
you were part of that cheating scandal.
He was part of the, quote, cheating scandal. Even though it was impossible. That's what we proved. It was literally impossible for him or anybody else to cheat.
It's interesting that he decided to stay with the police department and
yes.
face
yes.
that every day.
Yes.
And people looking at him differently.
And he did. They all three of them did. And but, you know, by way of answering your question, there are certain things that stick out in my mind. A little girl who lost her arm in a school bus accident. There's a reason why school buses are yellow. That means caution. So if you've got a tractor trailer, you can't run into them and cause them to flip.
It's interesting. I say it, Sonny, you must have about 1,000 times. My next door neighbor's a contractor. Every morning, I hear the beep, 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 beep. Now, I don't know what the case is when the truck's backing up, but I know it's because a lawyer, made that situation possible. And let me just connect that to one of the things we're talking about. And this is the, you know, we talked about the contingency fee agreement. We
yes.
talked about, representing though, and providing great legal representation. The one thing that I also like to educate people on during our shows is that change happens in the courtroom. Okay. And that's what our legal profession. So when you're dealing with big insurance companies, it's kind of like it is with labor. You know, you have there are some brilliant, marketing people coming at you, like terms like right to work, paycheck protection are really the exact opposite, right? That they're there to slander unions, okay? Well, they do a great job at going after the legal system, okay, would protect somebody, to destroy somebody who was injured as a result of somebody else's negligence. It's why we buy insurance, okay? It's why, right. But change happens in the courtroom, okay? And, if somebody who doesn't know what that means as a listener, as a great example would be, I owned a nightclub, okay? I was not into nightclubs or anything like that, but it came our way. We'd be in a big room, and you got all your partners around the table, and we're sitting there, putting together a security strategy for the new business model.
Okay.
Are we going to put a security guard at the back room, at the back door? Well, why would we put one there, Joe, on a Tuesday night? Nobody is at that door. Okay. Next thing you know, somebody sneaks in that door, assaults somebody. There's a security guard at that back door. Of course, we just got sued, but unfortunately, economics, jump into everything, and people... Well, you talk about the fact that you bring change in lives. Of course, a recovery to somebody, okay, who needs to live with dignity for the rest of their life. But also the fact that so it doesn't happen to somebody else. Talk about the importance and the impact, because a lot of people you represent, you too, Sonny, a lot of people, and I've heard these stories a lot, yes, they're grateful for the recovery and that they can live the rest of their life. It's that recovery is the only thing that is standing away from in the way of them, in some sense, is being homeless, okay, and living with dignity. But also they're just as happy that it may not happen to somebody else. Talk about that, how that feels, Bernie.
Well, there are instances, especially in, unfortunately, in the area of medical negligence,
sure,
where you're representing a client who's been seriously injured or passed away as a result of medical negligence that you can prove, what discernibly happens, and when you hear your client say, when they come in the door, I don't want this to happen to somebody else. I don't want this to happen. Well, part of what you can show and part of what in real life actually happens is it changes the protocol. It allows people in the emergency room, for instance, and a resident can't discharge a patient on a weekend because the resident's there without the attending signing off. Well, that didn't come out of the blue.
Right.
It came as a result of something happening which catastrophically injured someone, and it doesn't happen again because they've changed the rule. They've made it different. They put the security person
at the back door
because what you can protect against
is it happening again.
It's your responsibility to make sure that doesn't happen, because you can protect against it.
Sure, and in many instances, that lawsuit highlights the issue. It's just in workers' comp. I mean, I tell my clients that the employer is going to put in certain safety precautions so it doesn't happen to you or anybody else at work again.
Well, you see a lot of these high-rise buildings. Back when I was a young iron worker in 1982, you didn't have the static line up there.
No.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Like, I could walk across. I still remember.
None of the safety netting and all that.
Oh, yeah. I still remember. I forget the guy's name. But he was, I'll never forget. I'm at 18th or 17th in JFK. I think it was 18th. And we were on like the 16th, 17th floor. And I wanted to, we had a diagonal. Now, it wasn't a small beam, but I walked across because I wanted to practice. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't holding on. His name is Bill Carlin. I will never forget it. And he started screaming at me, right? I'm like, he said, what are you doing up there, right? And I'm like, I'm practicing. He's like, well, you don't need to be doing that if you don't need to be doing it, right?
Right.
But I, unfortunately, and in both of your worlds, somebody, you know, it, you know, obviously there's static lines for a reason where you hook up, you hook your safety, you know, line to, and now they're safe again. Okay. There were things, you know, those things happen. You know, I've had conversations with defense attorneys on shows where they're educating their hospitals on, you know, not, they work for the insurance company.
Right.
So they're educating their hospitals on protocols. So, you know, they don't get sued for $100 million again.
Well, Joe, you mentioned a real life example. One of the first cases I ever worked on with Paul Annapol, who's no longer with us, was a backup beeper on a trash truck, which, because it didn't have a backup beeper, took this man's leg off because he didn't see it coming.
Oh, my God.
The backup beepers today, are they annoying? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Are they critical?
Critical.
Absolutely.
Bernie, let's segue a little bit to a story you told us. First of all, you talk about, you know, those who inspired you, and we've talked.
Sure.
But one of the stories that I've even mentioned on some of our broadcasts was the one with you and your father and the counselor. Okay. It's one of the great stories ever told.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We, believe it or not, we got about 12 minutes left, but there was no way I was rolling out of here without this story and having our listeners. You would had fantastic grades in high school. Okay. And you know, you had a, your dad and you had a, had a career plan. You're there with the, you're there with the counselor. Talk about, take it from there.
Okay. Plans to go to, go on to college. Looking forward to it. As required, went to Overbrook High School, class of 67. So it gives you a sense of just how incredibly old I am right about now.
Well, you look fantastic. That's all.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And you meet with the counselor, high school counselor, to talk about your grades and what have you. So we meet with this counselor who's got this perfectly coiffed hairdo. And my dad takes morning off from the barbershop. We go up together. And she's got a folder. It's got my name on it. She then indicates to my dad that she's looked at my grades. She's looked at what she believes will be and is recommending
career path.
A career path for me because I am perfectly suited for this career that she's outlined for me. And then, you know, we drum roll, we're waiting for what she's going to say. And she says to my dad and to me that I am perfectly suited to be a, an auto mechanic.
Which is a great career for, you know.
There is, first of all, there's dignity in all
work. Of course.
Sure. And there's certainly dignity in being an auto mechanic.
Absolutely.
But what my dad knew about me was I don't know the difference, probably still don't, between a carburetor and a spark plug.
Oh, your dad must have knew me too.
I couldn't change a tire if my life depended on it. So, but
then I'm not going to tell you the story about me putting a white wall on my aunt's car backwards and my dad looking at it when the car wouldn't move.
What's
but
wrong
go ahead.
With this one?
Was this your first meeting with this guidance counselor?
Oh, yeah.
Black or and white?
She was white. Okay. She was white. It was also my last meeting with her.
I'm sure.
So my dad very, very calmly doesn't get upset. We leave the meeting. We're in the car. We're driving back to the barbershop. We get to a stoplight. He puts his hand on my knee, and he says, "You're going to college. End of debate. You're going to college." And to this day, I wonder how many people she said that to who look like me, who didn't look like her, and their parents, because if the counselor said it, it must
they
be true.
They just did it.
They just did it. They just did it.
It's a, an incredible story, especially as a young person and believing in yourself. But you're vulnerable at a young age.
Yes,
absolutely.
And one of the things that, Sonny, you and I know this. It's been one of the great experiences of my life. I know Sonny's also, but with the Spark in the Dream initiative, right? And I'll tell you, we've done 30 to 40 shows. It's just awesome. But these are the stories okay, so many good people with such great potential, right? You don't hear them on the news. It's always about...
It's always the bad stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I can tell you, you know, when I hear that story, okay, especially, you know, how your dad reacted, okay, that in a sense, you know, changed the course of your life. Like, in other words, if he would have said, all right, we're going to get, you know, set up at you know.
Because she's got to be right.
She's got to be right.
But can I say something about you two guys? Because I've gotten a chance to know both of you. And it's about giving back. Joe, your careers, plural.
Yeah, I do.
You've got a bunch of
I had a lot of them.
And Sonny, what you do that has nothing to do with the law per se, but giving back and just how important it is to pass on and to replicate what you do. And, you know, I know for me, mentoring has become part of
Talk about that, if you, because you've had the opportunity. A lot of judges, you know, that you. I mean, we don't have much time, but touch on that for a minute about the individuals that impacted your life. You know, after that great story, and then talk about paying it forward.
A number of judges: Judge Harvey Schmidt, Judge Clifford Scott Green, Judge Stanley Greenberg, who was a mentor to me in so many different ways, who brought me with him to places that otherwise I wouldn't be welcome to be.
Sure.
But being with him made all the difference in the world. And sometimes you don't see what other people see in you. And I certainly didn't at that point in time. But with that responsibility that he saw in me, how can I not pay it forward? I'm very active. I happen to be the president of what's called the Board of Directors of City Trust. We manage Will's Eye. We also manage Girard College. One of the things that we do at Girard College with the young men and the young women, but especially the young men in high school, we mentor them. And we bring in individuals. There are a number of retired judges. There are people who are at Vanguard, at Comcast, you name it, from all different fields, because Maya Angelou says, if you see it, you can be it. But if you don't see it,
and these are
young men, young women, who come from difficult backgrounds. They were fortunate enough to get into Girard College, and our obligation is to let them know, here's the world, here's your oyster. You can do whatever you want, but our obligation as mentors is to bring it to them as mentees. But that's what you guys do.
Well,
that's what you do.
Yeah.
But that's actually been a drive of yours for a long time. I mean, I remember your speech when you won the Justice Miss Mono Award. Mentorship was a recurring theme throughout that speech.
Thank you.
And it was pretty impressive.
We only have a couple minutes left. Sonny, I'd like you to talk about, you know, as a board member, okay, and I knew how happy you were and how proud you were when Bernie was when we read out the final tally, and talk about what Bernie means to you and you know the importance of and the honor of him being in the inaugural class.
Well, as you said earlier, it's so important to have that person who's at the pinnacle of their profession be chosen first, because it brings so much credibility to what we're trying to do. And, you know, Bernie exemplifies that. I can't think of a better person, you know, to have as an inaugural inductee than Bernie Smalley.
And I totally agree. By the way, that goes the same for the board. You heard what Bernie said. Mm-hmm. So your impact and the team of individuals, you know, we're just starting this. But Bernie, we want to thank you for being on the program.
It's absolutely my privilege.
We want to thank you for everything you do, and of course, we want to thank you for accepting the award too, because just accepting it and bringing the credibility to it along with the other individuals, it means everything. And it's
another teaching moment.
It is, absolutely. By the way, if somebody wants to get in touch to retain your services at the firm, how do they get in touch?
Well, we have a website. I'm at Raines & Lawn, senior trial attorney at Raines & Lawn. We're now at 2400 Market Street, and 569-6190.
Fantastic. Bernie, thanks so much, man. This was the fastest hour.
Please.
It's been a privilege. It has been a privilege.
It's our pleasure.
Are you sure it's been an hour?
It has. Sure? It's crazy.
It always goes by.
Because it's moving.
I know.
It's
moving. Believe me, we didn't even talk about the World Series.
We didn't.
thank you, guys.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Sunny Bank Show on WWDB Talk 860. We want to thank Bernie Smalley, Legends of Justice Hall of Fame inductee in our inaugural class, absolutely, from Reigns and Lawn, and you know, just for honoring us, and we're so excited about it. On behalf of Sonny Banks,
yes,
I'm Joe Dougherty, and on behalf of our honoree, Bernie Smalley, thanks for listening, everybody.